Dennis Lindsay now has one thing off his summer checklist. That's a head coach, and he joins us right now. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, guys. You doing okay?
Doing great.
Are you doing okay? You've got a coach now. I guess that's your shoulders. You're probably standing a little bit straighter up now. You don't have as much weight on your shoulders. Quinn's here to do a little bit of the lifting for you.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. You know, we've got a couple decisions coming up as well, so we're moving on to the next things.
So at the press conference, it appeared to me, Dennis, that you were very pleased and that you got your guy. I've seen hires made before where GMs are a little bit less excited. In this situation, I felt like genuinely you felt like you'd made the right decision. Obviously, this hire is huge for you, and your careers now are inextricably linked. Do you feel like you got your guy? This is the guy that is going to take this Jazz organization forward, maybe to another era of success like we've seen before?
Well, that's the hope. I would say this. Look, we had excellent candidates that we didn't get to. We had four that we spoke to at very extensive levels, really throughout the organization. And I don't want to abdicate my responsibility. It's a very important and key part to our process, my role. But as you guys know, I have owners to answer to. I have Randy Rigby that I report to. I have a great and experienced and balanced and diverse management team that I work with. So, again, I've used it before. I don't mean to be trite, but just in my 18 years, I haven't come across a unilateral decision. The Utah Jazz and the organizations I worked with before really make decisions as a group. So certainly my future is tied to Quinn and his acumen and coaching ability and ability to organize and discipline the group. But so is Richard Smith's and David Fredman's and Walt Perrin's and Trey Burke and Derek Favors and Gordon Hayward. The list just goes on and on. And, you know, we believe that, you know, not any one of us are smarter than all of us. So everybody has a role, and I'm proud of the process, proud of the outcome. It was a very difficult decision in many ways because, like I've mentioned before, I could have seen each of the four individuals in the seat, and you try to imagine how you would compliment them in their role. But as you know, you have to make a decision, and we did, and we'll stand by that and be judged by that, as you guys just stated.
You made an interesting comment, Dennis. You said you had other candidates that you didn't get to. That means clearly Quinn Snyder sold you, and you figured something made you determine we don't need to get to these other candidates because Quinn's going to be our guy. What ultimately sold you and said, we don't need to interview anybody else, Quinn's our guy?
Yeah, great question, interesting question. And frankly, when we went into the final meeting with ownership, it's new to ownership, this process relatively new to me, and Gail Miller asked some outstanding questions relative to, were we going to decide from this group, and did we need to open it up further? And when I went into that meeting, I didn't know if we would open it up or if we would select from the group. I was very comfortable with the group. I was really comfortable with our diligence and process. And I think there were quite a few things relative to Quinn that we felt would be good for our group. His level of experience as a head coach, the ties to certain philosophies where there just was a seamless view that not only fit Randy Rigby and the Millers and me, but more importantly, frankly, the players in our playing group as we evaluated them. So there are many things that struck a chord. I think his passion, consistent passion, way back to early Duke days, a player development, that is a key piece. As you guys know, we have a team of very young players, and still impressionable. And so if we can individually get those guys better, even without adding to the group, and in aggregate, you would think that we could be significantly better. So you guys have seen the tweets and the public mentions relative to Quinn and how many players he's been able to help. That's one thing that I mentioned in the press conference. A big piece for me was when we started doing debriefs and exit meetings with players really A through Z in his 3 years at the Austin Toros, they just mentioned consistently, hey, you guys have something different and special in Quinn. He really has spent more time working to help me get better. And these weren't not necessarily guys that were the most or the highest level prospect to reach the league. And so we just really appreciated that overall diligence and towards his job and the passion towards development. And clearly he's a great communicator. And we just look forward to supporting him and building a staff that is diverse in experience and background. And so we're just jumping in it with both feet, guys, and just moving forward from here.
Utah Jazz General Manager Dennis Lindsay joining us here on ESPN 700. You talk about building a staff, and that's something that a lot of people are curious about. We've heard rumors. I'm curious about the process. How much of that is collaborative with you and the rest of management, and how much of this is just Quinn having the autonomy to go out and get the guys that he wants and the guys he's comfortable working with?
Again, it's a little bit of both. We have to find... It's interesting building a staff, guys. It really is. It's much like building a basketball team. Those who fit your philosophy that will be able to teach what you do, those with a trained eye, with a slightly different expertise and experience that will be a value add, those, frankly, who are just directly opposite, maybe in personality, so you can good cop it, bad cop it, dependent upon role. So I think the best thing that we can do in management and with ownership and with our resources is just really listen, provide a sounding board, give him multiple names, options, structures, and then let him paint. And as Kevin O'Connor said, the head coach of the Utah Jazz needs to be Babe Ruth, and that's what we've told Quinn, and we want to consistently allow him to be in a seat in the position of authority and supporting that way. So there will be times where he'll come to me and we'll have a really in-depth conversation, and I would imagine there are going to be times where he's going to say, hey, Dennis, this is what I want. And I get that. So, and we want to support that.
Bill and I have debated this back and forth. We've had listeners and callers debate it back and forth. Quinn Snyder is a young guy. He's a 47-year-old coach getting his first job at the head position in the NBA. So a lot of people are divided on whether or not there needs to be sort of an elder statesman on the staff, a more experienced voice. Where does the organization stand on that? Because a lot of your players are very young. They relate better to young guys. And obviously, this organization in the past has had immense success with those elder statesmen in the NBA, if you will. So what's the organizational standpoint there?
Again, we're just talking it out point by point, guys. And certainly experience and a trained eye. Again, different skill sets. Many coaches want to watch one side of the ball. You may need a conscience on the other side. Many times coaches watch one side of the ball and they want someone that they fit with philosophically on the other side. So whatever plan they're in place, the head coach has great comfort in knowing that the person in charge of that responsibility is very close philosophically. So one thing that we found is Quinn's very collaborative. fortunately, I had several years of experience with him in San Antonio / Austin, really inquisitive, a man of his intelligence and degrees. Those are easy things to see, but I think his ability to listen is something that has stood out over the years, and as we continue to do our work and diligence towards him. So I found him to be very open, and we'll talk that out. And whether it's a very experienced coach or someone with moderate experience but a different skill set, I'm really confident he'll come up with the right staff for him.
Well, Quinn's your guy, and there's no doubt about that now, and you've answered all the questions, and now time will tell. You'll build this thing with him. So turning your attention to the draft, because that's the next thing on the I'm assuming staff falls in with Quinn, but the next big thing is checking off that draft box, Dennis. And
yeah.
And I know you don't know who you're going to pick yet, because there's four teams in front of you, and what Orlando does at number 4 and Philly does at 3 and Milwaukee and Cleveland in front of you determine what you'll do. But how close are you guys as a front office and as a basketball staff to having your value board set? And when do you anticipate having that value board for this year's guys locked in? Because I know you haven't brought everybody in for workouts yet.
But right.
You're not going to set your value board necessarily on the individual workout. You've watched a lot of tape on these guys, whether they were in school 1, 2, 3, or 4 years. So at what point in time do you guys as a staff hope to have that value board locked in and ready to go?
Right. Well, we have a couple different boards. We have what we call a market board. So we're trying to anticipate what other teams will do, and as you guys would imagine, at this date in June, there are several different scenarios and what ifs, and so we'll play that out a few times on who's selected and who's left. The interesting component with that is trading up, trading back, trading out. And certainly you're going to do that relative to the board as well. And then at this stage, what we have is we have several individual votes where we're looking at Walt's list and Richard's list and Freddie's list and Justin's list and Bart's list and comparing. And I think what that allows us to do at this stage is ask the right questions. We're still in the process. While we're getting answers and we're getting clarity, believe it or not, there are several good questions to be asked in what we call the late draft process. And the late draft process is very interesting. It's really dynamic. I've been part of teams that have stubbed their toe in the late draft process. So we talk a lot about just how we're going to decide. And believe it or not, even though staffs remain the same and teams remain relatively the same, the draft room and the late draft process dynamics can really change year to year. And so with that, we'll decide 24, 48 hours roughly to set our board. Every so often there's something dynamic that happens, within those last 24 hours that could alter something. Every so often there's a late piece of medical that either gives you great clarity to select the player, or you now have to eliminate that player. And it's the proverbial ping pong ball where you take one and the other balls fall down. So it can be altered late as well. But the thing that we try to do the last 48 hours, if you will, is to take emotion out of it. Stick to the process, stick to your work and your diligence. And not that you always get it right, but more times than not, you'll do better than reacting on the last comment that's out in the air in your draft room.
I was going to say, because with all the work that you do and the draft process is a year-round process, are you a believer that you have to stay true to that value board? Because if you didn't, aren't you almost throwing away 6 months, 9 months worth of work? Are you a believer in the draft value board and staying true to it?
Absolutely. Now, there are times when something unexpected happens in the draft where you want, you may want to move up or move back or move out, and you'll have to react to that quickly. But I, my belief is you'll react quicker and with more confidence if your order has been appropriately debated and worked on. So by definition, what you're saying is true. It's a little bit more dynamic than that because of what teams in front of you do, but certainly there's an order and a process that I believe you have to stick to.
Obviously, Jazz fans and the people we're hearing from very eager to know what's going to happen with that number 5 pick, but you also possess the number 23 pick from Golden mm-hmm. State. Curious to know how those, like the value of those two picks are viewed. Obviously, 5 is more important, but you know, there's been a lot of great NBA players that have been found late in the draft or emerged from other processes than being a lottery pick. Is that 23 pick equally as important to hit on as the number 5 if you end up picking with both of them?
Guys, my and how we treat it, there's no inconsequential decision. Look, if we were to hit on the 61st pick, meaning take someone who give them a little bit of guaranteed money that weren't drafted, Wesley Matthews, if you will, and they make your roster, that's a win. If they become rotational, it's a big win. If they become a starter like Wesley Matthews did, or like we've had Danny Green or Gary Neal in San Antonio and Chuck Hayes in Houston, then you're playing with the house's money. So we really are paying attention to numbers well beyond 60, especially in this draft. We didn't feel the same way last year. We didn't think that there were a lot of players past 60 that could warrant guaranteed money and a big opportunity, but we're excited. So it stands to reason you start moving to 35 and 23. Those are real chips to play. Now, will we draft 3 young guys and add them to our young 20-somethings? We have to talk about that. That's something that I think we'll all need to be convinced that that's the right thing to do for our group. And if it is, so be it. And we'll have to own being really young in a man's league and grow them up quick. It could be, again, aggregate those picks together to do something interesting. It could be move back. It could be, frankly, one of the better options just with 23 as calls are coming in is pick up a first and something else and push those decisions out. I hesitate to do that a little bit because this is a strong draft, mm-hmm. but the goal, guys, as you know, isn't to draft perpetually. It's to build a team that can function. So the great thing is, the great news for Jazz fans is we have a ton of interesting options. That's why we set up the team the way we did, with the flexibility and the picks and the young players. And so now we have to execute on a few things.
Dennis, speaking of guys that you have rights to that aren't here, give me and Sean and the listeners an update on where you guys as an organization are with Raul Neto and Anton Tomic.
So Ante is playing terrific. He's really improved. He's shown some motivation to come over. Quinn knows him very well. Cheska Moscow, where Quinn was an assistant 2 years ago with Ettore Messina, was in the EuroLeague with Barcelona. Those are two of the 5 to 7 international clubs that operate at NBA level. So they're just terrific clubs. So Quinn knows him very well and likes him. We'll see where that takes us. There's always buyouts and contractual things. There are teams that have interest in Ante. So I think we have to just take a look at it and participate as best we can to understand what he wants and what he's looking for. Does it fit with us? Could it fit with someone else? If it does fit with someone else, what are they willing to give? So, again, there's a ton of interesting conversation to be had there. Raul had a good year. He's someone that's really clever, that plays with good imagination and pace. This market, guys, as you know, likes players who can pass and play as pure points. He's that. There's some things that we hope to touch him up close and work on, but he's a really interesting young player. He's a really sincere kid. Comes from a basketball family. His dad is a basketball instructor, so I think he's learned the game the right way. Is it the right thing to bring him over now or push it out and stagger he and Trey's contracts? Again, we have to debate that, but those are the type of debates that you want to have because you have a set of good options.
Do those guys, and this is, again, part of your job is projecting, do those guys project as rotation guys or starters as you project them forward, Dennis?
Hard to say because it's always relative to your team. And as you guys know, this is a young team, and we have several good picks coming up, and who we were to select, and what do we do with the 30-plus million in room. So, again, I would just hold that aside right now other than say they're two good players, and we're interested to have serious dialogue moving forward, and we'll try to determine in short order what the right decision is for them and the Jazz.
Spurs going to win tonight, Dennis?
I sure hope so, guys. How about that first half?
Wow.
Is that amazing?
Hey, Dennis, you couldn't go 19 of 21 in an open gym, much less with LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris. But I don't know that anybody could do that again.
Yeah, that was especially, that's a great point. Eric Spoelstra does an unbelievable job, especially when they've organizationally decided to value skill and speed over maybe traditional size. But the way they can cover, they have several players out there with great length and defensive back speed to have a half like that against a very well coached and active defense is on that stage with those stakes in play. It was amazing. I was able to witness a lot of great halves my 5 years there, but the ball, their pace, the intelligence and skill that they were playing with during that stretch was really amazing.
Speaking of that first half and then, of course, the entire game, I mean, Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard were the stars of that game three and really took things over. Are they products of the Spurs organization? Is that why they're so good, or do you think that they would have projected that way and had that kind of success elsewhere?
Yeah, interesting question. So there's a lot of ways to look at that. I was always amazed when I walked through the walls, the level of character that was in the walls with the people that you worked with, proficiency and skill sets. I'm not just talking about players. The motivation, the open environment, where nothing was sacred, there was no bad question. So it was really an unbelievable place to learn from. And so when you can build a culture like that with the right people in the right seats, amazing things can happen. And one of the things we decided in San Antonio years ago, we were really going to invest in player development and just whatever that percentage is out there that you can improve a player, let's do everything possible to get every player to that point. And it may be 0.5% for an aged veteran. It may be, 3.6% for Kawhi Leonard here. But what you start adding those small wins up, it's amazing the synergy that you can create. So I hesitate to, those two players clearly are NBA players. Would they have developed differently elsewhere? Who's to say? But they did develop very well there. They came into the organization in much different circumstances, but it's a credit to the program, really from A to Z.
Hey, Dennis, thanks so much. It's always great catching up. It's good to do it again. A couple of weeks till the draft, 2 weeks from tonight, the draft, and we'll look forward to that and catch up with you then. Thank you.
Hey, guys, we really appreciate your coverage.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Dennis.
General Manager, Utah Jazz, Dennis Lindsay with us here on ESPN 700.